This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at HomeTeam.com.
We're in a moment of debris, and it's very natural to want to like put your head in your hands and cover your head and try to wait for the debris to clear. But there's a huge opportunity in change, and the opportunity in change goes to those who move with focus and clarity in the moment of debris.
Hello, hello, hello. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Color of Money podcast. Hey, we have like an intimate conversation today. It's the Washington, D.C. Metro conversation.
It's the fireside chat. It's the fireside chat.
The fireside chat. I like that. And I'm Emmerich Peace, and I have my co-host, Bowman Keating. We are absent our other two members. They are here with us in spirit, Daniel Dixon and Julia Lachey. They're taking care of business. And today we're going to talk about just leading in trying times. And one of the conversations about leading in trying times, particularly in the real estate industry, we're going through some trying times. There's some changes. There's some adjustments that we have to make fundamentally within our business. And we want to talk about that a little bit about the NAR settlement. But more importantly, you know, how do we lead in trying times? Myself, I operate a market center, an office with over 500 real estate agents, and that's 500 independent contractors that are free thinking, free will, and we have to figure out how to harness that energy. And Bo on the other side, Bo's dealing with another animal. I shouldn't call it an animal with today's client. Bo's dealing with another group. And Bo, you guys have 7 market centers, correct?
Seven locations, yeah.
7 locations. And how many agents total?
Just under 1,000.
Just under 1,000. And so in this place, those are like two dynamic organizations. And how do we lead in that place? How do we grow in that place? How do we manage between the two of us over 1,600 independent contractors and lead and guide them in a direction? And the biggest conversation right now is the NAR settlement conversation. We changed our language from commission to compensation. We are changing the way that we deal with our customers and clients with our disclosures, whereby we're being super clear and transparent of how we are compensated and what's the responsibility of the compensation. And then the bigger overarching conversation is how do we deal with each other professionally? And the ethics behind how do we deal with other real estate professionals in an ethical, a fair and ethical way. And the first part of that, when we talk about that, changing the language from commission to compensation. Compensation is earned from the work and the professionalism and how we show up in our industry. And so our compensation has to be earned. And that's a real deep conversation. We've always earned our compensation. Let me make that clear. But what's our real value? In the absence of value, price matters. And so what value do we bring to this industry, Bo? What, as a professional, as a real estate professional, what value do we bring in? How do we even articulate that value?
Yeah, Rick, I think it's really interesting because I've been thinking about it recently that we kind of have two major tasks on our hands as leaders in today's environment, right? One is to help people navigate the existing changes that are going on. And the other is to make sure that our leadership approach and mindset meets the moment we're in. And we often talk about like leadership as a one size fits all, but there's different types of behaviors and attitudes from a leader in an organization that are important in different times. And so I think as we think about our business today, the first thing you're talking about that we're dealing with is all these changes and how we actually do business. And a question about what is our value as real estate professionals and how do we communicate that, right? How do we communicate that? How are we compensated for that? And how we bring that to the table? And I think that part of that is a shift, you know, you said from commissions to compensation, right? A commission says, hey, if X happens, I get a piece of it, right? It says XYZ happens, I get a piece of it. In many ways, that's divorced from the idea of what did I do? What did I do? What is the services I do? And I think as real estate professionals, we have always provided a lot of value. We do a lot of things, yet our compensation has always come off of a commission. And so for us to rethink how we communicate the value we provide and actually lay it out for people, I think becomes a real important piece of where we are today. And one of the things we've been really looking at is the way in which, what is it that home buyers and sellers really are looking for when they hire a real estate agent? And I think part of the thing that to me seems like it's been, you know, kind of wacky in this whole conversation and all the lawsuits and the way the press covers this. It's like, well, you know, real estate agents aren't finding people their homes anymore, and so therefore they should be paid less. But if you actually ask any consumer, they're not usually looking to the real estate agent to find them a home. What they're really looking for is somebody to guide them through a process that has huge impacts on their life and that they do infrequently. And if you actually see the surveys and the responses to all the surveys and information and data we have about what do consumers actually want from their realtor, it comes into two things, right? They want to mitigate the risk of moving through something that is unfamiliar to them. So they want to make sure that their real estate agent is ensuring that they don't fall in any of the like pitfalls or traps, or they don't misunderstand something, that basically you're avoiding any cataclysmic activities happening to them as they navigate this process that could impact their outcomes. And so the first thing they're looking for is risk mitigation from the expert professional who's been through this and can, you know,
Navigate the landmines.
Exactly. And the second thing they're looking for is they have to make a big decision. Should I sell? Where should I move? What type of house should I buy? Which of these offers should I accept to sell my house? And what they want to know is that there's someone who can not only guide them around the landmines, but is there to help them work through that decision and help them make the best decision, provide the context for them to make the best decision and to help them validate that they're making the right decision because they're making high stakes decisions. And so when people are in a position to make high stakes decisions, it's often hugely helpful to them to have an advisor to bounce those ideas off of to ensure that they're not missing something in their decision-making process. And those two things are the things that if you actually dig in to all the information from consumers, they're looking for from the real estate practitioner.
You know, it's funny. I always like to ask you a question because I always get some huge, almost philosophical, well thought out, well structured Harvard answer that a basic dude like me can understand. I love it. And it's funny because that's just the way that you present things. And when you said that, right, I had to start writing notes. And one of the notes that I wrote in this whole idea of value is manage expectations. That was the first thing I wrote, manage expectations. And then I wrote down mitigate risk. And then I wrote avoid failure. And then I wrote decision making. When you take a look at those four items as a professional, that is the value that we bring to the consumer. We manage expectations, we mitigate risk, we avoid failure, and we help with decision-making. And in that place, you know, some people have said, what do? We help people find houses, and we really shouldn't be paid much for finding people houses. What we just, those four items are professional services. And so if we were to leave the customer client to find a house or to sell the house on their own, it would be much like what lawyers say. A lawyer who has himself as a client has a fool for a client. That's just professionalism 101. A client who represents himself is a fool. So what do? You pay a professional to come in to manage expectations. You pay a professional to come in to mitigate risk. You bring a professional in to avoid failure. And you bring a professional in to help you make an educated and informed decision. And that's the value of what we do. And that's what you just talked about. And so when we're having this conversation about value, how does one articulate that's what they do? Because we can have this conversation. We know what we do because we've been doing this. How does one articulate this is what I do and this is how I do it? Is it something that you put in writing? Should we have a book? Should we have a buyer representation guide or a seller representation guide? How do we let people know what we do?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's happening in the environment today, if you take your four things you just talked about, is much clearer expectations up front. As real estate professionals, we've become used to, we do multiple transactions. We see sort of the process and we have an understanding of that. But the consumer we go to work with, this is usually might be their first time, it might be the second time, but it might be 9-10 years apart from when they did their last transaction. And so I think part of this opportunity is up front to get on the same page with the person you're serving on what it is you're going to do. And part of that is potentially saying there's elements of this I'm not going to do because you don't want them, right? And so that forces us to actually outline the components of what we do in that managing expectations. And one of the things that I think this really provides, which is potentially exciting if you can get that conversation down right, is an opportunity to sit with a client, to sit with a customer and say, like, here are our service levels. Here's different things you could do. You know, if I want to buy a car, I can go for the low cost experience with some risk. I could go to an auto auction and just pick up a car. I don't know if it's going to work. You know, I might feel like I could deal with all that risk and all I want to do is get the cheapest price. But I need to then understand the risk associated with that. I may decide I want a white glove experience. I want to walk in the dealership. I want some nice coffee and tea. I want it to be played out for me. I don't want to have to haggle with anybody. I want this car delivered. I want it detailed. And by the way, I want you to fix it every time something goes wrong with it. And I want you to be here to remind me when I'm supposed to change my oil. There's different experiences. And I think we've said, oh, I'm just going to do your transaction. But a real estate transaction and the services we provide are not a one size fits all. And so how do we start to, in this environment, be able to outline the different components of what we do and also explain why we might be different from somebody else? And I think that's something that we as realtors have not had to do. If you look at the data, you know, historically, the vast majority of buyers and the majority of sellers worked with the first real estate agent they interacted with. So the game was to be first, not to be best. And we are moving to a world where people are going to choose. And so we no longer just need to be first. We need to actually be able to articulate why we are best.
And so when we talk about that we're the best in articulating our value proposition, one of the things I believe that we absolutely have to do, we have to go to what's in writing. Our entire business is about, if it's not in writing, it doesn't exist. So we're going to have to go to a place where, just like you said a menu of services, or just write down what we do. Write down what we did before. I know for me, for the past 25 years, I've always had a menu of services, menu of what I do. And I've always articulated what I did inside of my business. I like to attribute that when as a solo agent or as a team, that's why I always receive repeat and referral business, is because you knew what you were going to get. And I've always managed expectations. And so I believe that we have to go with what's in writing moving forward in this industry. On the other end, in dealing with this idea of, not this idea, the fact that we have this NAR settlement and we have to engage with the public differently, that is a part of helping the public understand what we do and how we do it. So there's no misinterpretation, because that was a part of the settlement too, that nobody really knows what we actually do or what our services actually include. So when we go to writing and we start to write what our services are and how we're going to conduct ourselves professionally, that whole idea of a menu of services, it answers that question. And if it's in writing and we deal with every customer client the same way, then we've eliminated that. Because I know you can't go into a development project and not have your scope of work together.
Yeah, we show up every day and say, hey, we're going to take on this client without being clear on what that scope of work is. And so here's the opportunity to get on the same page with our clients about what that scope of work is. It's also the opportunity, as I see it, to expand my business. Because if I only had one set scope of work, there might be somebody who only wants a part of that scope. Or there might be someone who wants me to add something, right? I might be building a track house and that client wants the minimum, if I'm the contractor, they want the minimum scope. But I might be doing somebody's rehab. I'm doing Emmerich's rehab. And he wants a nice koi pond in the back with some seating and some benches and some willow trees so he can sit and decompress. And he's willing to pay for that. But if I just offer him a track townhouse, I don't actually create the most value for him, nor do I create the best value for myself. So by actually starting to define our services in ways that can expand or contract, we actually open up the base of clients that we can effectively serve. And we eliminate people having too many expectations, which is a typical real estate thing. They actually want us to call them every day, and we only were calling them once a week. But we actually get on the same page about those things up front, and we can continue to provide great service to people.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit HomeTeam.com to learn more.
Yeah, and in that space of providing great services, those great services, it also minimizes the conflict for the broker calls of complaints of people not feeling like they're getting what they thought they would get.
Yeah, I mean, I think typically misunderstandings stem from unaligned expectations. I've been actually reading this as a kind of rabbit hole, but I've been reading this book recently called Thanks for the Feedback. And in that book, they talk about different types of feedback, Emmerich, right? Like, and they say that fundamentally there's coaching feedback where you're like teaching someone how to do something better. There's evaluatory feedback where you say like, hey, that was an A or that was a B or that was a 10. And then there's just like encouragement feedback where you say like, good job, you're doing a good job. And one of the most eye-opening things for me in reading that book was this idea that you could actually be giving someone positive feedback and they could be upset with you because it wasn't the feedback they expected. If I came to Emmerich and I actually asked Emmerich how I could be better as a leader, and all he said to me is like, Bo, you're amazing, it's great, I would eventually become frustrated with Emmerich because I was expecting a different type of feedback. I say that to say, it's a little bit out there, but like say that to say, in the real estate industry, we've become accustomed to a set of unstated expectations in how a transaction works and how we deal with each other. I hear in what you're saying, Emmerich, is this idea that it forces us to communicate at a different level with our peers, with our other colleagues, to make sure that expectations are set. They're not assumed, they're communicated. And so I think the number one thing I'm seeing in the communications I'm getting, the calls I'm getting, the issues I see people facing is the issues are stemming from uncommunicated expectations. And so whether that is with our colleagues in the industry or whether it's with the clients, the key to this is making clear our expectations, our boundaries, and our parameters up front so that we can deliver on that. And for those of you that are out there that want to deliver, there's nothing more exciting than being very clear on what you're supposed to deliver on it so you could deliver on it. Where we get messed up is when we assume. And so all of our assumptions right now need to be out the window. And we need to show up every day saying, okay, we know the world that we exist in. We're professionals. We're experienced in this. How do we reset and get clear on what those expectations are so we're not having a whole bunch of assumptions that are not explicit?
And we talked about in dealing with customers and clients, we talked about the 4 points: manage expectations, mitigate risk, avoid failure, and decision making. That same conversation flows through in dealing with other real estate professionals, based on what you just said. The game does not change. It's just the players change. It's still the same whether you're dealing with customers or clients, whether you're dealing with other real estate professionals. It's still the same game. You're just changing the players. And so when you said that, I was doing my notes, misunderstanding or byproduct of miscommunication. And so in dealing with other agents, if I'm thinking about this, we should really have, let's just say three separate books. Actually, we should have a book of how we deal with buyers. We should have a book of what our expectations are for sellers. And we should have a book of how we expect to deal with other real estate professionals. And what I mean when I say that is that whatever your policies and your guidelines are in your business, you make it stated and you go by that regardless of who you're dealing with. Because again, part of this NAR settlement is that we don't have a standard operating procedure of how we do business. We just do business any kind of way. So really, it doesn't matter who we're dealing with. We should have a stated policy and stated guidelines of how we're going to deal with people. And more importantly, we have to communicate that to the people who we're dealing with so that we can manage expectations and mitigate risk.
No, that makes total sense.
And I never, until you said that, I told you, you have a way of explaining things that just makes it make so much sense. Now I get it. Because I was working on, I thought about it, I just could not put all of the thoughts together. And I'm pretty sure that some of our listeners, some of our audience that were thinking about it, they just never put it together.
And Emmerich, I think part of what you're getting at here is that changing times call for a changed mindset and changed behavior. And so Emmerich laid out these four things that are critical in doing business with clients and our colleagues today. There's also the question of how do we shift our mindset? If I'm in a well-established business flow that's been going on for some time and nothing's changing, my main activity as a leader is to lubricate that flow and have it go faster. If I'm a real estate agent post-pandemic, and all of a sudden I thought the world was going to change, but instead it just started expanding. My main job is process as much as I can and move it through the thing. And so I'm trying to make these things go. And all of a sudden I find myself in a world where everything's changed. And some of the skills that might have made me a good leader or a good practitioner or a good business person in that prior world don't translate to the other world. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about, in our company, a lot about being a wartime CEO. What does it mean to be a leader in wartime versus peacetime? You know, in peacetime, you might be having the troops do some training just to learn and do some. In wartime, you got time to be running some training exercises. Someone's going to die. We got to make a decision today. We got to go. So there's a different approach, a different urgency, and a different way of operating. And I've always thought about that around, you know, a couple of dimensions. Around this issue of clarity. During a time of conflict and change, it is important that you are clear on what it is you are doing. You'd be crystal clear because there's all these moving parts and you can get stuck trying to figure out all the moving parts. But at some point, you're going to have to make a bet and you're going to have to move. So clarity on the direction in which you're going. Clarity on how you're going to approach setting expectations with your clients, clarity on how you're going to communicate with them, clarity on how you're going to help them mitigate risk, clarity on what is your value is a really important thing, right? The second is prioritization. We got to think through all these things going on. We could do so many different things. Should I be rewriting my forms? Should I be come up with a different way to market? Should I be figuring out this, that? I got to know what's most important and I got to get there quickly and I got to eliminate the noise of the less important things. In triage, we got to get to what's most important quickly and focus on that. So prioritization becomes critical. The next one is we got to take action. It's very easy when everything's changing for us as people to want to sit back and see how the field unfolds. I've been actually arguing with my son. He's a quarterback in this football team. And I always see him. He goes, but he loves to read the play. And we've had this whole conversation about at some point, you have to stop reading and you got to run. And when you run, you've got to change speeds. You got to go faster and you got to hit the hole. And you don't know what's going to happen, but you got to commit to that action. Are you going to pass? Are you going to run? And you got to then do it. And so there's this piece where we got to get out of waiting to figure out the whole field, and we got to actually just go do something. And once we go do something, we're going to have to communicate because the world's changing around us and we're in action. So we're going to have to learn while in action, which requires a different level of over-communication with the people around us, with our clients, with our colleagues, with ourselves and our team. And so how do we think about the role of clarity, prioritization, taking action, communication in a changing world? And in the Wartime CEO book, they talk about how a peacetime CEO might focus on the big picture, but a wartime CEO cares about a gnat, you know, on the dog's butt, if that is in the way of getting to the mission. So are we clear on what the things are that we have to do to get to our goals? And are we ruthlessly prioritizing and focusing on those things in this time of change?
That's real. You brought up three things. Sick. The time is changing, the mindset has to change, and the business has to change. And when you said that, it just brought something to mind. You know, change is inevitable. Growth is an option. You know, I believe that a lot of times what we do, particularly in this industry, is we consistently do what we've been doing, and then we expect different results. Well, if we consistently do what we've been doing, we're going to consistently get what we've gotten. And this time, day, and age of where we are right now, you're not going to get the same results because the cheese has actually moved. And then when we talk about that, you said something else. You talked about leadership. And one of the things, I don't believe enough of us as individual practitioners believe that we're leaders. We believe that we're following the suit of a leader, i.e. the broker or the brokerage or whatever structure we might fall under, that's our leader. The reality is that I'm going with the old army theory, a leader of one. You have to lead yourself because you're the one that's ultimately taking the action. It's not who's above you that's taking the action. You have to take the action. And I'm not saying what you do does not fall under the structure of the overall organization. What I'm talking about is you as an individual have to make a conscious decision. You have to make a choice to take action, and you have to prioritize the actions that you're taking, and you have to be clear about the actions that you're taking as an individual. And I believe that a lot of times we overlook that we are a leader. We are the CEOs of our businesses individually. And the actions that we take as an individual practitioner, professional, is going to dictate what our business looks like. And we cannot overlook that. And then you said something else when you said, you know, the time of the day dictates the style of leadership. Whatever the time dictates the style of leadership. When you said that, I had a trigger. And the trigger that I had was about skill building. And when you were talking about training and just being prepared, the real question for a lot of us in this day, time, and era where things are changing, are we skill building? Are we building our skills? Or more importantly, what are we willing to do to build our skills in this environment that we're in and that we're changing towards, which is going to require an investment in ourselves to make sure that we're better today than we were yesterday. And we have to put plans in place that we're going to be better tomorrow than we were the day before. Because again, we're in the information age and everything is changing for us. Where in the past, we could use skills for 5 or 6 years. That doesn't work anymore. So what are we doing to skill build to grow our leadership lid to just become a better person to take better actions, right?
I mean, we're in an environment that requires us to develop and use new skills every day.
Mm-hmm. When you said something about clarity, bringing clarity to your vision, your mission, or whatever your business is, whether we want to understand it or not, that's a skill. People don't understand it. Discipline and consistency are skills that we have to develop. We don't just show up disciplined. We don't show up with moments of discipline. Nobody's ever disciplined all the time. We don't show up with that certain discipline to our business to lead generate. And we don't show up with the thought process that we actually have to be consistent.
And Emmerich, you think about it, right? In the moment of change or in a moment of crisis, you know, they talk about the fog of war, right? I remember I was actually listening to this interview, someone who was in, you know, New York City on 9/11, because we're sort of at that time of remembering that moment. They talked about how when the towers collapsed, there was dust everywhere, just dust. And some people were hiding for cover, right? So like when something happens that's traumatic, that creates all this debris, like we're in a moment of debris. And,
right.
And it's very natural to want to like put your head in your hands and cover your head and try to wait for the debris to clear.
Right.
But there's a huge opportunity in change. And the opportunity in change goes to those who move with focus and clarity in the moment of debris.
Wow.
And our industry is going through a moment of debris. It's going through a moment of change. Old structures are being blown up. And new structures are coming into place. The world's not all different, but a lot's different. And the question is, are you going to be able to have the clarity of purpose, of what you stand for, of the values you deliver to your clients, to go take action in the middle of that fog? Because there's going to be a realignment of the world order. That might be the world order in your neighborhood. If someone was the top agent might be different coming out of this. It might be in your niche or in your sector. It might be in your brokerage if you're looking at it from Emmerich and I's perspective. But today, somebody's going to have to move in the time of uncertainty. And those who move will be the ones that have the growth in the change. And those who move will define the way the world order looks after the change. So are you moving to define the next world order, or are you hiding, waiting for someone else to define it for you? Emmerich, you've had just amazing experience and success in this industry as a practitioner yourself, and then someone who has trained and developed hundreds of folks to go on to have amazing careers. As you sit in the moment we're in today, if you are a practitioner in the real estate business, what do you think is the most important thing that you would be betting on for the future of our industry?
Well, I still practice, Bo, just so you know. I still carry a couple listings. I still stay engaged. And so in that, I would say one's willingness to read and study. Read and study, because what's happening is that information is not being delivered to us in a manner in which we can really comprehend it on a verbal level. Because on a verbal level, what's going on right now is we're getting someone else's interpretation of what is to come. We have to get into a place where we're actually reading for ourselves and then bringing our interpretation to the information that we're getting, because we're going to have to practically apply this information to our individual businesses. The other end of that is that we're going to have to be intimately involved with our sphere. That's always been a constant, but it's now more so than before, because the people who used to trust, and I'm saying this way, the people who trusted us in the past, they're being inundated with the same general information as everybody else. So those people may not feel that they require your services as much as they did in the past. And so we have to reconnect with those people to make sure and affirm with them that we're still that great professional service provider that they had in the past, and we're still going to be valid in their lives in the future. And if we don't, you know, out of sight, out of mind, and they're not going to think about us in the same way. And they will start to form their own opinions that, well, maybe I don't need Emmerich anymore. Because you know, CNN said all he did was found me a house in the first place. And he never contacts me anyway. So clearly I'm not important to him.
So how do we reconnect and how do we redefine our services and our value? And as practitioners, we've been engaged with people in our community, right? In our spheres, in our past clients, people who've trusted us, who've had good experiences with us. But we can't forget that in this moment, we have to reconnect and redefine who we are and what we do.
I believe that one of the things that we probably should do, you remember we were talking about how we deal with our buyers and our sellers? Maybe we send these people who are our past clients a menu of our services, of what we did and what we do. And then we just follow up with a phone call. Hey, Bo, this is Emery. Hey, I'm just following up. I sent you some information about my menu of services and what I do for my clients. Did you get it? Yeah, I got it. Well, I just wanted to send you that just to remind you that the same services that I provided in the past, I still provide those same wonderful services. And right now, what I'm looking for, I'm building my business, and I'd like to know, who do you know who has to buy or sell a good piece of real estate that can use those services that I just sent to you last week?
As we sort of come upon our time here, I just want to kind of go back, because I think we kind of covered three spaces, right? One is that in the changing world of the NAR settlement, we are moving from a discussion about commission to a discussion about compensation, which is a discussion about value. And in that space, I think you laid it out really well. We've got to manage expectations. We got to mitigate risks. We got to avoid mistakes, and we got to enhance the decision-making for our clients. We got to actually do the same thing with our colleagues to make sure that they can move through the process as well. We spent a little time on what does it mean to adjust to change or to being in a wartime, and how does leadership shift? How do we bring clarity, prioritization, a preference for action, and over-communication into our lives in a moment of change? And then finally, we have embedded experiences with people. We've embedded relationships. You guys have all built businesses and organizations over time. How do we ensure that in a moment of change, we reconnect and redefine and recommunicate what it is that we as a group are and are doing?
That's a great summary of what we talked about. The real question in closing out is, how does one apply that to their life, and how does one apply that to their business? And I believe that that's on an individual basis of how they decide to do that. But what I would like to say is that choose a direction and run in that direction. Just make sure that you take action. Because at the end of the day, your business is developed, your business grows based on the decisions that you make and the actions that you take. And so when we're talking about that, just be clear about the decisions that you make and the actions that you take, and make sure that in that clarity, it aligns with what your business practices are, what you expect the outcome to be, and then what your end users expect that outcome to be. And we just keep growing businesses.
Yeah, I know we always say, right, we hear it a lot, this idea that our business grows to the extent that we do.
Right.
But in this moment of change, there's a huge opportunity for business growth, but that business growth starts with our own growth. And so the question is, in this moment, when things are risky or scary or different, how do we commit to the growth personally that helps our business grow?
Well, I really think we have to make our mind up. We have to make a decision on what are your goals for your life and what are your goals for your business. What are your goals for your life? Because, you know, you design this life, and then you talk about how you're going to fund that life by operating a great business. And I think it all has to come back to, you know, just goals, expectations, and what you want your life to look like. And then you have to be consistent with pursuing that.
And there you have it. Wise words from the fireplace chat from Mr. Emmerich Peace.
Nope, that's from Bo. That's just, you know, that's the beautiful part, Bo, is We just have to have these conversations on a regular basis and just keep bringing the energy. So I appreciate you. And I hope that our listeners can appreciate Bo as much as I do. We always dropping gems. We always dropping jewels. And this was a great conversation. And we want to thank you guys for being here on the Color of Money podcast. Tune into us at thecolorofmoneypodcast.com. There's always a great episode. There's always some gems, jewels, and knowledge being dropped. Last words, Bo.
You summed it up. Everyone, have a great week. It's great to be here and look forward to challenge and navigating these changing times with all of you.
There we go. Have a great day.
Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.